Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Investigate Europe podcast. My name is Sindhuri Nandakumar, and today I'm very excited to bring to you this new episode because it features our latest investigation, and the investigation is called Derailed: The Desolate State of European Railways. That's pretty self-explanatory, right? So the European Union named 2021 the Year of Rail, and had this fancy PR train running across the continent. But when our team spent months looking at this issue, they discovered that the reality is actually not so glitzy. So I caught up with Attila Kalman, who is a reporter from Hungary and one of the coordinators of this investigation, to ask him more about it. And he was actually on the field at the time of recording, so he'll tell you a bit more about that.
So hi, Attila. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi. Great to be here.
Thank you. And this is your first podcast with us, and you've kind of jumped straight into coordinating this big investigation into trains. And I think as I speak to you right now, you're in the middle of your travels. So tell us a bit about where you are and what you're doing.
Yes, exactly. I'm right now in Skopje, the capital of North Macedonia. And the idea was for me and our colleague Anna from Serbia that we will do a train trip from Budapest, Hungary to Athens, Greece, through Serbia, Macedonia, Greece, and we were starting in Hungary for sure. And the idea was that this train track is being renovated for years now, and there was a contract between Serbia, Hungary, and China that they want to reconstruct this track and electrify it. But a year ago, the European Union somehow thought that they will want to jump on the project. And now from EU funds, there are parts being renovated, which made this track very interesting for us because there is a geopolitical play was unfolding here, meaning that there are a corridor which goes through all member states, just member states, Bulgaria, Romania, Hungary and Greece. And this one, which we were traveling, is actually parallel to that, a little bit shorter. So maybe if both corridors will be ready, this one will be better for passengers and freight trains also, which poses a question if who is actually controlling and who is actually in the driver's seat. We are speaking of trains on the Balkans, China, Russia, because Russia is also involved in some parts, or the European Union.
Right. Okay. So it seems like a lot of players, a lot of countries. And is this something that you are exploring at an EU level through this investigation? I mean, what is this upcoming investigation about?
Well, the investigation is mostly about how the European railway system is operating right now, because this year was the European Year of Rail. But as we were reading studies, making interviews, we saw that actually in the last couple of years, or let's say decades, the investments and the funding was not behind the policies. So there was a lot of nice words about how trains are important, but not much was happening. And this was mostly because financing, because building rails is super expensive. And also there was some conflicts between member states and the European Union as well, because most member states with their big state monopolies, monopolies as railway companies, they will mostly try to develop their domestic systems because most of the revenue is made from domestic travelers. So international travel was always a second or third or I don't know how many priority. So or cross-border connections was not really established, and they are building very slowly, which makes it actually very hard to travel in Europe by train. And we thought that this is actually in contradiction with all the policies pushed by the EU, how can they make passengers and freight also shift from road to rail or from plane to rail? And we actually found out that it's really, really very, very hard to cross borders with trains. And it's also, if you could, it's very slow. You have to transfer a lot, but it's changing in the last few years because of the European Green Deal. So maybe it will be better, but as experts stated, actually, the time of the years or decades when the money is spent on rail will be shown in real life, because it's very slow to build anything.
Wow, I must say that that's surprising to me as someone who doesn't know much. But, you know, sometimes when you think of Europe, you think of especially vacationing in Europe, people crossing the continent in train, and, you know, all these romantic visions. So you're essentially saying we have to wait a while before we get to something like that, right?
Yes, exactly. Because just let's take a few examples. There is the Brenner-based tunnel, for example, which is on the border of Germany and Italy. It was planned in the very first TNT network plans in the 90s. These TNT networks are about the core network of the European Union, not just rail, it's about roads, waterway, everything. But most of its plans was about rail, because roads are somehow can be connected, but if there is a missing link in the railway system, then it's basically makes it hard to get from A to B. And this Brenner-based tunnel, which is being built for 20 years right now, it should be on the corridor from Rotterdam to Genoa, which are the two very important ports in Europe. So this tunnel will be, if it will be operational, it will be very good for the European economy, because then goods can be sent from one port to the other, and on the way between they can also do what they want to do with it. But somehow it's as a cross-border project, it was not financed by nor Italy nor Germany in the last few decades, just on a very small scale, so the building was very slow. And the Italians were told that it's more important to them, so they started to put more money in it. And on their side, tracks are nearly ready or operational, but on the German side, there are still a lot of work to do, because we don't really know where it came from the German government or from the Deutsche Bahn. But it was not that important for them to build it. And the European Union was also without any measurements to take to make Germany spend more money on this project. So now it's not operating, and it's in the making for 25 years now. There's a huge delay, and you can actually see this kind of conflicts on building cross-border links on railways and lots of borders, which is a huge problem, because when you're a passenger and you just want to get somewhere, it also could be a problem that you have to change trains or go around, for example, the off. But if it's about transferring goods and about freight trains, then it also means a big economical loss, and also actually it makes it easier for all companies to transport everything with trucks, which is very bad for our climate, because the GHG emission is much more on when we're talking about trucks. So actually, if these links will not be built, that means that it will be very hard to actually arrive at the climate goals which are set by the European Union.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing, right, that we consider rail to be somewhat more green mode of transportation. And like you've alluded to, the shift from road to rail is at the core of the EU's climate goals, which are quite ambitious. But you also mentioned earlier that the sector has been underinvested in for decades compared to other modes of transportation. What's the reason for that?
Well, if we see that all the GHG emissions in Europe, we can see that around 20-25% is coming from transportation. And this sector is the only one which was growing in emission in the last, I guess, 10 years. I'm not sure about this, but let's say about this duration. So this is a lot to do when we're talking about transportation. And this is the sector where actually it seems like the hardest to reduce emissions, because there are also people want to travel more. But as we see the numbers, most of the emissions is coming from freight. And that means that as the economy is developing and there is more things done between countries, and this is mostly done by truck, then the emissions goes higher and higher, and this is very naturally goes against the climate goals. And what has have to be done here is to support a model shift, which means, as I mentioned before, that there have to be a big network development on railway to support the model shift. But also this means to support interoperability between states, because if you are going with trains through a lot of countries, it's very hard to actually cross borders, because on every border there is a lot of controlling and it's very slow. And it's also a problem that if you want to send something from a country to a different one, and you don't have that much goods, for example, just let's say 20 washing machines, it's very hard to put it in a train and not in a truck. So this model shift was not really supported by the EU in the last couple of years. And the explanation for that could be a lot of things, but one thing is that road lobby is actually very powerful and was powerful in the last decade. It was said by a couple of interviews of us that after Ursula von der Leyen became the commissioner, the head of the European Commission, and she made the Green Deal core of her program, it's changed a lot. And we can see that there is already a lot more money is going to rail. But right now, it's still, if you see all the funds, still more money going to rail. And other reason behind this could be that actually, as I said, if you put money in real infrastructure, it's very slow that something will be happening. And in between, you have to do something. And actually, what they done was to give money to build more roads. And there was also other measurements and tax exemptions. And for example, the Eurovignette, which is a system where with trucks, you don't really have to pay for roads, so you don't have to pay tolls. So they're actually supporting on the side the truck business.
And, you know, you're in Macedonia right now, really explaining when you started out, you talked about the number of players who are involved, which, yes. You know, proves the point that the European railway system is not a cohesive unit. It's fragmented and you have monopolies, you have member states. Can you take us from a macro level, who are the big players and how are they influencing this broader system?
Yeah, well, it's that's where things get a little bit complicated. Because as it is everywhere, rail is mostly a public everyone looks at it as a public service, which means that if it's not profitable, trains still have to operate because they have to transfer passengers from the place where they live to where they work and all the stuff like this. I guess it's everywhere in the European Union and also in candidate countries like in Macedonia that the rail is not financed by the passenger because there are not enough passengers. So there's a lot of money have to be put into it by states and governments. And these subsidies are millions and millions of euros everywhere, which means that these big companies and the state and the governments are somehow merging into each other and their interest is very hard to separate. So if we say that something is in the way of interoperability of the network and connecting Europe to rail, and we see any hurdles in the way, it's very hard to say if it was done by the government or done by the bigger railway companies that something was not happening as it was planned in the European Union. For example, a few years ago, it was very visible that the German railway company, Deutsche Bahn, was not supporting night trains anymore. For example, the Budapest-Berlin line was not operating anymore because Deutsche Bahn said that there are not enough passengers, it's not profitable, we have to cut it off, and they wanted to invent more in high-speed rails. But if we say that, okay, this is happening, it's very hard to tell that this was a decision of the Deutsche Bahn or the German government, because from both sides, it could be a reasonable choice. But this can be seen anywhere. For example, in France, when talking about SNCF, which is their railway company, or the French state, it's very hard to tell that which player wanted to close a lot of sidelines because it was underused. Was it the French government because they didn't want to subsidize underused tracks, or was it actually the railway company who said that, okay, it's not operating as good as we thought, so we just got these lines. So these decisions, I guess, are always made by both major players, and under major players, I mean the governments at every respective country and also the state monopolies of the railway.
And do you see any positive examples in Europe that kind of indicate that things are getting better?
Well, there are positive examples from many sides. Mm-hmm. We can say for one positive example that it's also a goal of the EU that they want to have a railway system which is not emitting any CO2. So this could be reached if every line is electrified and electricity will come from renewable sources. And for example, ÖBB, the Austrian railway company, is very developed on this space. So they are in the front, but also Germany is actually doing better and better in this regard. So this can be one positive example that the emission is cut even under the measures which can be seen right now. And speaking of timetables, for example, and passenger services, it's not an EU country, but it's very important for the railway network because it's in the middle of Europe and you have to pass it nearly all the time if you're going from A to B from the peripheries. It's Switzerland, and there is a very developed train network. And that's because that they have a different plan concerning of rail that they said a few years before that they don't want to set up a system which is planned on the demands of the passengers. But they said that they are building a network and they are writing a schedule and timetables, which are as good as they can provide. And if they provide a good service, then more and more passengers will use the train. And this actually is happening, so we can see that.
It's nice to know that this is happening, and you also touched on the fact that the investments are generally increasing, so that's hopeful. Attila, as a final question, I want to know, where do you go now from Macedonia, and how has being on the ground reporting this story, how has it informed your research? Like, were you surprised by a lot of what you're experiencing, or does it kind of tie up with what you had been researching beforehand?
Well, the terminal destination will be Athens, where there is a big port, was developed by the Chinese in the last decades. It's in Piraeus, which is right now the fourth biggest port in the European Union. And that's the end point of this trek, is because actually the whole infrastructural development by China or supported by China was because they actually bought this port after the Euro crisis. And it's a very interesting thing that the Troika made the Greek state to sell this port to China, or not China, but they wanted to sell it. They have to sell it to someone because they needed money and China was the buyer. So China owns this port and we are heading there because if these tracks will be completed, this corridor will transport the Chinese goods from the Chinese port in the heart of Europe. So, that's our final destination. Before that, we have to cross from Macedonia to Greece. And as far as we know, there are no buses, no trains right now. So you have to do this by taxi, which is shows that the tracks are not in the best shape right now. And actually, from Hungary to Serbia, I also had to cross on foot, which was kind of surprising because as I checked, there are the tracks are there, but because there are constructions undergoing in Serbia, it's only one train coming. Going from Hungary to Serbia once a day through this border, but I couldn't wait for it. And it was, as I saw on the internet, there are buses, but the buses are not operating anymore. So I had to go with the taxi to the border and then cross by foot and then take a bus on the other side. And actually, just to make it more controversial, when we're speaking about trains from Serbia to Macedonia, we also had to cross by bus because the border connection is somehow not operating there anymore. It could be because of the reconstructions, but it's also because of the lack of passengers and the will of the Serbian government. And you can say that actually, when there are big reconstructions going on a track, it's very easy to state that, yeah, sure, there are not enough passengers and you have to somehow operate with other modes of transport, for example, bus, to transport all these people. But actually, it was the same before the constructions, as people told us before. And that also poses a question, if this big investment will be ready, will it be beneficial for everyone, or will it be just beneficial for China, who wants to use it for freight trains? Because if we see the example of Switzerland, and there will be a good service, maybe people will start to use it. But as far as we see now, there is not a big demand.
Okay, so maybe when you come back on this same journey in a few years, we'll find out whether you have to cross the border by bus or not. But but thank you so much. And I wish you safe travels on your journey onwards. And we look forward to hearing from you when you're safely back home in Hungary.
Thank you very much. And thank you for having me.
Of course.
I'm happy to share with you that Attila made it safely to Budapest, even if he did have some exciting moments along the way. And you can read about his accounts and those of his colleagues all across our media partners and also on our own website. So check it out at investigate-europe.eu. And if you like our work, subscribe to our newsletter. See you next time.